Rebecca.
And I'm Krabeshni.
And welcome to Building with Builders,
our podcast where we believe that building is fun.
Super fun.
So much fun.
Build Her Collective was created to help women with building and renovating. And we believe that with the right tools, everyone can build. For us, it's all about encouraging women to take back control of the building process and really achieve their dreams.
We are women in the building industry, and as developers, builders, and project managers, it's our passion to share everything we know with other women doing the same. And that's why we've created this podcast for you.
So if you love all things building,
you're into design,
keen on the numbers,
about to renovate,
thinking and dreaming of that forever home and what it would look like,
or even developing for profit,
then you've found your family.
Subscribe to our podcast and follow our journey over at buildhercollective.com.au.
Today, I'm so excited to have Veronica Morgan from The Elephant in the Room, the Home Buyers Academy, and you listed a whole ream of other places that you're active in, but I can't remember what they are. So welcome along, and I'm so glad that you could be here with us today.
Well, I'm really pleased to be here too. It's lovely to meet you, and this is going to be a fun chat, I think.
I think so too. So we've already, as you know, been having like a quick catch-up before we started, and I am so impressed about how many things you have going on. I'd love for you to share all the things that are kind of happening in your world with our listeners, because to be honest, like, it's a lot and it's really amazing. And what you're doing, I think, is making waves in the property market.
Yeah, as I get older, I think I have this reputation for basically not mincing my words. And it's funny, I've been on television, I've co-host two podcasts, and when people speak to me now, they say, oh my God, like hearing you on TV or hearing on the podcast, I'm like, well, that is because I actually don't change. Doesn't matter who I deal with, what I do, what I say, I don't change. And as I said, as I get older, it's sort of more comfortable in my own skin, and I've always been outspoken. But now what I'm seeing more and more in everything that I do with regards to the property industry, and I guess, you know, I've written a book, I've co-hosted two podcasts, I've been on television, yeah, I'm a buyer's agent, I've been a sales agent, I'm working on a number of different projects, because what I see is that it's so expensive, property. It's such a big part of our economy, property. It makes a difference between people's financial future and also their personal security in so many ways. You know, you look at women and women's freedom to not live, you know, with abuse, for instance. And a lot of that hinges on whether they're actually financially free or not. There's so much wrapped up in property. It's so important for us, both, you know, emotionally, mentally, psychologically, physically, financial, everything, you know, it's so important to us. And yet, how difficult is it to know, A, where to go to get trusted property advice when you need it, and B, who you can trust? There's a real challenge in even knowing where to go to get information. And then you go into one source and you'll find that they can only tell you what they know, and they don't tell you other things. Or unfortunately, property advice is unregulated. So therefore, basically anyone has an opinion, and most people are quite freely, you know, will freely share it. And so there's a real challenge. And I've got this sort of metaphor. It started off with, it takes a village to buy a property. And I've actually changed it to, it takes a crew to buy a property. It's like building a house, you know. And the problem in the property industry is when you go to someone for advice, if you've only got a hammer, then every problem looks like a nail. So if you go to a buyer's agent, for argument's sake, for help, and they only specialize in one area, then they're going to try to get you to buy in that area, right? But then you've got a problem. If they don't specialize in that area, they don't really have enough local knowledge to be able to help you properly. So what you need is a crew. So you need someone that knows how to use a screwdriver, and someone who knows how to use a saw, and somebody knows how to actually wire up the house. And, you know, you can't build a house without the proper crew and all the different trades knowing what to use when, and also project management to coordinate all those skills so that you actually build it in the right order. You're not trying to retrofit plumbing after you've finished building the structure, right? You dig up the floor after you've laid the concrete. It's a similar sort of principle, and that's missing in the property space, and yet it's so is needed. And that's sort of a big long-term picture goal of mine at the moment.
Yeah, but it's so relevant, and it's actually a huge problem when you really sit down and think about like the root causes of why things are happening the way they're happening. Do you want to talk to maybe, I think because there are so many different types of professionals and service providers in that property realm, when you are looking to buy your first property, who are some of the people that you're going to come across and how do they help you?
It's interesting. In Home Buyer Academy, which is one of my very many bows in my quiver, we've put together a course of first home buyers. It's your first home buyer guide. It's the PACE system, right? Because you have to get things in the right order. And PACE stands, so there's 10 steps within these sort of four phases: preparation, action, commitment, then execution. PACE, I can't even spell. And the very, very first step, or the very first of those 10 steps, is to actually get your support crew. So this is even before you've really even fully saved the deposit, because you need to start learning and you need to start lining up and knowing where you're going to go to get the advice you need. Most people think, okay, I need a conveyancer or a solicitor, I need a mortgage broker. Or some people would just go to a bank, but more than 60% of people are using brokers now. And we recommend brokers, by the way. So they're sort of like the two people that people would think of. And they generally don't get the lawyer or the conveyancer involved until way down the track. The broker, often they don't get them involved early enough either. But the broker is often the first person, other than parents and all the rest of it, that you sort of go to for advice and the water cooler. And that's both a good thing and a dangerous thing. It's like going to the plumber and saying, while you're at it, can you just do a bit of electrical work for me, right? The mortgage broker can't advise you on the property. They can't. That's not their area of specialization. They can advise you on the structuring, and they can advise you on, you know, different lenders and which ones view you as a better prospect. They can advise you on fixed and variable interest rates. They can advise you on offset accounts and all that sort of stuff, right? And that's ordinarily valuable information to understand at the outset. And financial literacy is really important, but most of them do not have the experience nor the qualifications to actually advise you on property selection. But buyers will ask brokers because they don't know where else to go. And they'll say, what should I pay for this? Oh, is this a good property? And the broker's a bit compelled to maybe encourage them, follow the money, look to where the incentives are. And then you've got to go, well, how are they paid? They're paid when you borrow some money, aren't they? You know, it's not necessarily dishonest, or it's not necessarily shady or shifty. It's just a fact of life that when you incentivize people, they will behave according to those incentives, right? And so, if people don't know where to go to get the advice, or that's the only source that they sort of know, then of course they're going to get bad advice.
And it's also one of those problems of hindsight. You don't know what you don't know, and you kind of are leaning on a range of people around you to share what they know, but they don't know the way you want to live. They don't know what's in your future. They don't know what your financial circumstances are. And so I hear what you're saying. It's like you're getting piecemeal pieces of information along the way. And Rebecca and I talk about this a lot in building. And it's interesting that it also relates here to property selection and property buying. And then you're kind of stuck in the middle where you've got 5 or 10 different pieces of conflicting, or sometimes maybe similar or different advice. And it's like, what do you take? How much weighting do you give to certain pieces of advice? And coming back to, like, what can you actually trust? Because are people telling you what you want to hear, or are you not hearing what they're saying to you?
Yeah. Or are they not asking you enough questions to actually give you the proper answers or point you in the right direction? Or are they not altruistic enough, which, let's face it, most people aren't. Most people aren't going to go, oh, you know what, I'll forego some money here because I can see that actually you're not a nail, you're a screw, and you need a screwdriver and I've only got a hammer. You know, most people can't take themselves out of that hammer thinking to go, oh, this person actually needs something other than what I've got to offer. Or they don't even know, because they haven't popped their heads over the parapet and looked around and went, oh, this is really complex. You know, all of these things need to work together to actually have the best outcome. And I look, when Megan's my co-founder of Home Buyer Academy, when we do our podcast, we're constantly talking about the mistakes that we made in our early sort of property journeys, so that we can show how a lack of information or not getting the right guidance, or somebody's given us information because that's what suits them and they haven't bothered working out what our plans are, or we didn't have a plan even. You know, so many people look at property as the end goal is actually purchasing the property. It's like, oh, no way. That's just the beginning. You know, you think that's the hard
thing. A long relationship.
That's it. And then you come back to your comment there about hindsight, and you go, that's when you start working. Oh, right. It's a long game. And if I bought myself a dud asset, I'm underperforming for years, and that's compounding working. It's negative magic, if that's even a term.
I think you're exactly right. And then another interesting point to talk about is sort of the culture of buying property in Australia. My husband is Irish and, you know, I'm from everywhere. So, you know, both being kind of immigrants to Australia, we kind of came in at it at a very late stage in our lives. You know, we didn't buy our first property together until we were sort of into our 30s, there was a big learning curve to figure out, how does this work here? What are the nuances for this particular place? Because in Ireland, you can buy a house in a totally different way. In New Zealand, you buy a house in a totally different way. And the values of what you buy and how you buy is completely different. You know, and I have two friends, both Irish, who are in a similar position, and they're in that mindset that we were talking about earlier, where it's like save and save and save and save. And once you have your deposit, then start looking. I almost want to say it's a mental barrier, because it's like I can't use my mental energy to think about all those other things until I've got that in my bank account.
Yeah, and there is that sort of thing about, well, I don't want to go shopping, I've got no money in my wallet. And you're sort of not really shopping, you're actually researching and learning and educating yourself so that when you do shop, you don't jump in boots and all and buy the wrong thing first up, which people can do because they've got no idea, or then their head starts spinning and it's like, oh, now I've lost time because I could have been using that time to prepare myself. Instead, now I've suddenly realized, oh, this isn't easy. This is challenging. This is hard. And now I start the learning journey and then my money actually starts losing value in a rising market. There's that book, Daniel Kahneman, you know, the Thinking Fast and Slow. And he talks about sort of the short-term thinking and long-term thinking. And I think he posits to say that the more complex the situation is, you know, our brains sort of go, oh, I want to dumb it down and make it real easy. We do the opposite to what we need to be doing at our times of most stress. And then how many times, I know this in my own life, when I've felt stressed about something and I've thought my options were so small, because basically my monkey brain or my lizard brain, whatever it is, had taken over and shut down my ability to actually think wider and think broader. And that is something that very much happens, particularly in a rising market. And we're experiencing one, we've been experiencing one, you know, surprisingly rising market across the country out of COVID. And normally sane, smart, successful people do crazy things in the desperation of FOMO. So we're right in the thick of it at the moment.
When you see numbers rising at a rate that you just cannot comprehend and it's so far out of your ability to save, that pressure is huge and it's real. But can we quickly touch on the rest of the word? And then I really like to get stuck into like really what's happening in the market right now and talk about that emotional roller coaster that you're on when you're looking to buy a property.
Yeah, so it's pace, action, commitment, execution. And the problem is that people, so action, right? So that gets to step four. The first step in action is search and inspect, right? Now, what most people do, they save their money, then they go and search and inspect. They miss out on three fundamental steps. So one of our students who has actually recently bought, and we've just recorded a podcast, which is his own manifesto of what his experience was. He said, you know, before I did the course, I was doing things in the order of like 4, 8, 6, 3, 2, 1, 5, repeat. And then I went, oh, I have to do it in order. And it does work. So the preparation bit is the bit that people don't do, or they get in the wrong order, right? So you know, the first thing is that your support crew, as I mentioned before, and the second thing is the money. Yes, yes, you've got to save, of course, but how much? You know, and what about lender's mortgage insurance, and should I pay it or should I not pay it? And having a strategy and understanding all of that early on will help you know, well, I can pull up stumps and buy when I've got 12% saved versus thinking I've got to get 20% saved. You know, so if you know that in advance, you're not going to save every cent that you need for 20% for argument's sake. You're actually going to go, actually, there's a good argument for why in my circumstances I can do it this way. So that's just one example. And then the third one is then when you sort of understand the money side of things, you know what your trajectory is there, you've got your support crew, then put together your plan, then work out where it is, what it is you want to buy, you know, what the compromises are going to be, get your reality check, really start understanding the market. Then's the action when you get out, search, inspect. That's the fun bit. People go, I love looking at property. It loses its shine very quickly if you haven't actually done the first three steps first. But then our fifth step, which is in action, is sort of counterintuitive because that's actually art. Stop for a minute now. Revise and correct. Have I got it right? Was I looking for the right thing in the first place? Do I really know what I'm looking for? Is that really what I need long term? You know, it really is to reflect and say, before I make this monumental commitment, is it the right thing? Am I going in the right direction? So that sort of gets us halfway through our 10 steps. And then we get into the commitment phase, because then when you sort of know, actually, yes, I'm on the right track. And a lot of our students have actually gone back and revised and went, thank God I did it. I thought it's back to those narrow options that you think in a times of stress, I've only got these options. And it's like, I don't just have to eat a shit sandwich, you know, like there are actually other options out there. Okay. So then we get into the commitment phase. And so the first step in that is understanding the methods of sale, you know, understanding really what's going on, starting to get to understand the industry, because now you get, you're playing, swimming with sharks, right? You're dealing with agents. You've got to work out, well, how do I interpret what they're saying? How do I ask smart questions, not dumb ones like most buyers you ask? And questions that will get answers. How do I identify different types of agents? How do I use that information to my advantage, right? So it's, you know, understanding the rules of the game, basically. And then when you've found something that you want to buy, and this sort of plays into this whole idea about buying to renovate, you've got to evaluate it. And there's a lot more in property evaluation than most people realize. And in different states in this country, like you guys are based in Victoria, it's not too bad in terms of vendor disclosure. New South Wales is slightly better, but even then, there is nowhere near the amount of vendor disclosure that you would think as a buyer you should be getting. So in Queensland, it's shockingly absent. Like I was appalled when I discovered how little information the vendor is required to disclose to you in Queensland. Mortifying. You know, in New South Wales and Victoria, like you've got the Section 32 certificate in Victoria, and in that is a zoning certificate, and you get a zoning certificate in the contract to sell in New South Wales. You don't get any of that in Queensland. And so it's different in different jurisdictions across this country. In that zoning certificate, just one example, you can find out whether you're in a flood zone or a bushfire zone. Now, if you don't know, A, that you can get that information, B, that you might need it, C, if you can't get it, can you ask for it and make it conditional? I mean, all these things, like that's just one tiny, tiny, tiny little thing.
I suppose to add to that, then how does it actually restrict you to do what you think you can do?
Well, you will know the answer to this better than I can. But like, so for instance, I went and looked, an agent called me about a property the other day and said, oh, is this lovely? It's a duplex. It's on the edge of a park. You know, I think your client will really love it. And, you know, the builder's prepared to do a deal on one half, right? And I went, okay, well, I'll take a drive-by. I take a drive-by and I look at this and it's next to the park, lovely. And look, something looks a bit suspiciously like a stormwater easement. And, of course, I know this stuff because I look at property day in, day out. I go, it looks like it might fill up with water potentially when it rains. And then I look at the driveway and it's elevated. So the block has been raised for this house to be built on it. So I go, council have made them higher because it floods. And so sure enough, it does. I did a renovation once years ago. I talk about my own experiences and my own mistakes. You know, I bought a property. There's a number of mistakes I made with this particular property back when I was a sales agent, actually, and I truly believed all property is good as just the price that makes a difference. That was a false belief that was very convenient for when I was selling, but not so convenient when I learned the other side of the coin. But this particular property, it was in a flood zone. I didn't even know. And I knew how to read a zoning certificate, but I still didn't even look, right? And I didn't even know it was in a flood zone. And it's never flooded. It's 100-year flood zone, right? But I did renovate this property and I extended it, right? And when I put in the DA, the council came back and says, oh, well, you're in a flood zone. And I only was adding only 4 square metres to the ground level. That's all I was adding. And they said, you've got to do a full-on report. So that cost me an extra $4,000. Just to do the report for a house that's already there. And I went, what if I don't actually add the 4 square metres? Do I still need to do the report? I was just curious. Oh, I did. Even if I only went up, right, I still needed to do the report. So it was a small thing in the whole scheme of things, but that was a bit of an eye-opener to me.
But these are the places that people get trapped, right?
Yes.
You know, it's the idea, and we were talking about this earlier, it's great to see the vision and have the ideas, but without the understanding the reality of what you're looking at. And then sometimes it sounds so boring to go, well, you got to check this and you got to check that and look under the floor and look for piss and do this and do that. It sounds like a broken record, but you can't do the vision if you don't have the facts. And if the facts don't affect the vision, fine. But a lot of the times they do, and this is where people kind of get caught out.
Totally. And in a hot market, people will overlook stuff that they would never overlook in a slow market. And this is a massive danger for buyers. I tell you, I see it all the time. And sometimes I even say to my clients in the buyer's agency space, I feel like you're a little bit behind the eight ball, a little bit disadvantaged because you know so much more than any other buyer going for this property. And sometimes these things are minor, it doesn't matter, right? But other times it's a major issue and it might not be major now, but if you go to sell it down the track without having resolved this, and it's a slow market, every single buyer will pick up on this and nobody will want to let it go. And I've seen that happen, you know. So everyone thinks that it's a hot market. This is what it's like all the time. It is not, you know. So that's the thing that we teach in, you know, in the actual evaluation part of it. It's like you need to check this stuff because if not, you get stuck with the property. You might have limitations that don't allow you to fulfill the vision, or you might be stuck with a dog of a property, really, that you then lose the ability to choose when to sell it. You have to wait for another boom to sell it in. Because, you know, if you want to upgrade or whatever it is, your life changes, you lose that discretion, that power of discretion. And property can be an extraordinarily powerful vehicle for our financial freedom, as I mentioned, but it can also undo us if we don't know what we're doing. This is a really, really dangerous time when people just want, oh, yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's all right. It's all right. It'll be fine. They have no concept how it can go wrong. So that's the evaluation phase. Then once we've done that, then we kick into execution phase, which is the starting point is the contract. And that's when, okay, you know, different jurisdictions, once again, have different requirements in terms of how a contract is formed, getting the right legal advice and when. Lawyers out there will say, oh, yeah, I can do conveyancing. But if they're not a property specialist, they will miss a whole heap of stuff. They need a claw hammer, but they've got a ball peen hammer, right? So they've got the wrong type of hammer. The ninth step is negotiation or auction. And so that is really important to understand how to price the property, how to work out what your walkaway price is, how to enter those negotiations, some of the tricks that agents play, you know, what the auction scenario is, all of that stuff. I'm fascinated by auctions, by the way, the psychology of them. And then finally, you get to settlement. And so, you know, once you've actually done the deal, then you've got a period of time in which you've got to get certain things arranged in different states, whether you insure it, when you insure it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So all that stuff plans through the settlement phase. So it's a very exciting part of it, but you can see that there's been a hell of a lot of work that needs to go in the right order before you get to that point.
It's definitely a journey.
Although it's funny, like, you know, I get into Facebook groups every now and then, because I want to understand what are the questions keeping people up at night? You know, where are they sort of trying to get their solutions? And some people are very gung-ho about, and then I just want to buy my next one and my next one and my next one.
It was the first thing ever.
Slow down, get the first one right, will you?
It's an interesting marketplace at the moment. And I would like to know, and I think our listeners would love to know, what are people doing right now? Well, what are you seeing people doing in the market right now because of the set of conditions that we're living within? And let's go locally here in Australia.
What I see people do, particularly in a hot market, and, you know, the figures, CoreLogic figures, we're recording this on the 1st of October. I don't know when you'll release this episode, but CoreLogic every month come out with, you know, national dwelling figures broken down by capital city and regions. And I'll just go with Sydney, because Sydney's sort of been the powerhouse in terms of cities, but Melbourne is doing very well as well. Sydney house price year to date, so that's in 9 months, up 25.8%. Now, I also track individual properties when I noticed that they were sold sort of last year or even the beginning of this year, and then they're selling again. And it's not uncommon to see properties that have been selling for upwards of 30% more over the 12-month period. So when you've got that sort of growth, that is the highest level of growth I've ever experienced in my 21 years of real estate. I've experienced other booms, but that sort of growth in 1 year was huge. We've just experienced it in three quarters. So, of course, buyers are going to be freaked. And so one of the things that I see, that FOMO, and as I mentioned before, they just cut out all due diligence. Or they go to auction and they say, I've got to pay whatever. And so the idea of working out what that property is worth flies out the window. And then not only is what is it worth in terms of what's been happening with recent sales and all the rest of it, but what is it worth to me? What's my walkaway price? And so then they go into auction without a plan. And particularly on the online space, it's even more disastrous than in rooms or on site, because, you know, at least you can see the body language of other buyers when you're on site. You've got no idea what's going on in other people's lounge rooms. And people just give up, they have decision fatigue, and they just throw everything at it. And so we've seen some ridiculous results, absolutely ridiculous results. And others you see, yeah, that's sort of in line with what everything has happened, but there's some standouts. You think, what the hell? I often ring the agent and go, what's the backstory to that one? Like, tell me, what was going on? What's the buyer's stories? Because it's got to be something really nutty's gone on.
This rise in value, obviously, it has to be funded. So where is this extra funding coming from? Are people just stretching themselves to?
Well, this boom is driven by owner-occupiers, not by investors. Like both Sydney and Melbourne experienced a sort of similar period of boom that ended 2017. Ran for about 5 years. And that boom was driven by investors. So in around 2016, APRA stepped in and went, right, we've got to start controlling this. And so they started putting prudential measures in place. The banks started sort of tightening up, increasing interest rates for investors, cutting down on interest-only lending and various measures that they had in place to trim back, cut back on the amount of investor lending. And it worked. And it took about a year, though, before it bit into the actual market. Right. And then when it did, it bit deep. Right. And we saw in Sydney, we saw median price come off over about a 12-month period, came down about 15%. So it peaked, came off. And then within 9 months after the election in 2019, within 9 months, it was back up 12%. It doesn't take long to bounce back either. So it can contract and then bounce back very quickly. Now, within all of that, some individual properties would have been unscathed and others would have plummeted. Because it comes back then to the fundamental quality asset that you're buying. Some things are good assets and they pretty much ride these waves out without too much damage. Others, like those C-grade property I think I mentioned earlier, people FOMO, people fighting for stuff that they're not doing their due diligence, the sorts of things that people would pick on in a slow market, that stuff, that really suffered. Right. So that it overinflated prices really, really suffered. So the averaged out at 15% drop, 12% rise. So what's going on? Where's all the money coming from? A lot of money now being driven by owner occupiers, a lot of money is coming from upgraders. So their value of what they're selling has gone up. So people go, oh, how can a first home buyer afford $2 million mortgage or whatever? And so they're not borrowing $2 million. They've had equity rise in whatever it is that they've bought the first time. And at the moment, nearly everything except inner city apartments going up, right? So they look at that and they go, great, well, I'll sell it for that. Then I only need to borrow X. Interest rates are low. Now, the government's starting to make noises about maybe reducing the multiple of earnings that you can borrow. So that means that, you know, the banks will start saying, well, no, you can't borrow that much because your income isn't high enough. So that potentially will come in and there's other little levers that can be pulled to try to restrain demand. But fundamentally at the moment, money is cheap. First home buyers don't have this luxury because they're trying to keep up.
Get on the train.
Yeah, but those are already in the market, assuming they've got a decent asset in the first place. That's half of what they've got that's going for them. The fact that they're rising prices is also impacting on their equity, right?
Cashing in and trading up. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Mm. So what people are doing wrong is that they're cutting corners, they're freaking out, they're panicking, buying anything, you know, and they're paying a premium for everything. And yes, sure, if you're going to have to pay a premium for everything, make sure it's a really good asset and then it's okay. But if you're paying a premium for a dud, something on a main road or something that faces south, you know, garden faces south and it's overshadow over lots of trees and whatever. I mean, the stuff that people will not touch in a normal market, don't do it. You know, be very picky. If you're going to pay a premium, be picky. Still be picky. Don't stop being picky. It's the sort of the message.
I suppose the other part of that is the people who are looking to buy, to renovate or develop, then, you know, we often say, what is your value proposition? So what value do you bring to this property that, or what vision do you have for the property that someone else doesn't have? And your unique set of skills can actually add value to that property in a way that someone else can't. And that's about seeing through the hype and understanding what you're buying, where you're buying, and what the parameters of your decisions are.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the problem in the renovation space is that there's so many television programs that make you think that everybody can do it, right? And also that black taps are going to be in fashion forever. So we often see lipstick on a pig renovations. And once again, those properties, we see them in the market at the moment. They try to flip them and They sell fine at the moment, but when the market slows, and this is when you're buying to renovate, you've got no guarantee as to what the conditions will be at the point of time that the property's finished. So you've got to actually price in whatever gain you need to make it stack up for you. That's got to be based not on a rising market. You know, it's got to be based on the actual property itself and what you're going to add to it and how you're going to transform it exactly, you know. Whereas what I see a lot of people do at the moment, they would pile in to renovate something and they're really relying on market growth to give them their profit. Well, that's really risky, massively risky. I've seen this happen in various cycles over the years. And the other thing that they do is that they fail to recognize that not all property deserves to be renovated.
I mean, it's an interesting point you make. We actually looked at one last night so we go through doing comparables and things like that, but what was happening was the comparables that we used were like the top of the market sales. The concept that was being costed did not meet the same level of finish and or product that the comparables were being used at. And I think that's a common mistake that can be made. And it's really looking beyond that, kind of critically analysing what you're looking at to understand where the costs lie and why that solution is working in that particular unique environment. I think you're 1,000% on point. And actually, I think I could talk to you for hours.
I could go on for hours. Obviously, you know, this sort of stuff, I find it endlessly fascinating because it's the bricks and mortar of it, the structure of it, you know, the actual engineering of it. Like, I find buildings interesting, you know, and the mechanics of it, right? And also the mechanics of human endeavor and our brains and how we shoot ourselves in the foot and sometimes how we help ourselves. And I find that endlessly fascinating. But, you know, what I find, and I see this quite a bit where in a rising market, quite a lot of people think, okay, the way I'm going to make money next is I'm going to develop. You know, they go, oh, I've, you know, I've got a few properties under my belt. I'm a good investor. I'm going to up my game. And I have seen people buy sites, often pay too much for them, do the development, not actually question whether that's the right product for the market, which I think you're sort of alluding to there, deliver it, and then go, why, even in a great site, it's one particular one in Balmain, which is where my office is in Sydney. Unbelievable. This is a site that had been sitting on the market. Well, everyone had knew about this was going to come up one day, right, this particular site, sitting sort of in a high position overlooking a ferry wharf and parks, right? And I'd known about this property even when I was back in a sales role 20 years ago. Everybody walked past it, getting off the ferry, go, oh, that's got to come on the market one of these days. And it had a DA for it to be subdivided and turned to two townhouses. And it was a terrible DA, like an awful floor plan, terrible. And somehow they'd done some substantial commencement at some point. So it was a really old DA, but it was basically perpetual approval because of some substantial. And I don't even know what they did because I couldn't see any evidence of they managed to get this thing approved forever. And so I actually bid on that property though for an individual owner occupier who said, I don't want to do that. I want to turn it into, you know, a beautiful home with a lovely view and a great spot, right? And so we were bidding up to a certain level for that. And this young couple of, you know, I don't know, young gung-ho developer builders, whatever they were, definitely from out of the area, they blew everyone out of the with the price they paid. We were like, whoa, okay, this will be interesting. But as we watched it being built, and they didn't put a Section 96 in to change it in any way, and it was a terrible floor plan. So it was like, okay, well, they haven't changed anything, so that's going to be a problem selling it for starters. But as they built it, the finishes and the style, it was like Hamptons meets, it was so wrong. It was wrong. It was badly executed anyway. It was ugly, but also it was wrong for the market. And sure enough, they sat there, they took forever to sell, even in a rising market. They struggled and finally they had to meet the market and they sold it, you know, they probably made no money. They could have made a mozza. And that market growth could have been the icing on the cake for them. But instead they stuffed it.
Yeah, such an interesting one. You can see what's happened there. They've gone easy road. So, okay. Approvals, I don't have to do anything there. I can build this thing. I've looked at that thing. It seems like it's going to work. But they've not really taken that step back to look to the bigger picture and understand what it is they're trying to achieve by developing. We see it more than we should, but what we are trying to do is teach women those important critical analysis steps and take the emotion out of it and really understand that how you pull a feasibility together, how a vision comes together, how you buy right. I think that, you know, everything that you've said about buying right and taking that time to become a subject matter expert in what you're trying to buy, you know, I couldn't agree with you more there. It's fundamental. And I think to wrap it all up, you've put all of your amazing thoughts down into a book.
Well, not all of my amazing thoughts. I actually have another book in the making, but I've got one book that I have. So I'm happy to offer listeners a 30% discount if they want to buy it. It's called Auction Ready, How to Buy Property at Auction Even Though You're Scared Shitless. It does go into more than just bidding at auction. It actually does go into the due diligence process and whatnot. So you can put the link in the show notes if you want. And yes, I have written a book. I do have another book in the wings, which will be all about avoidable mistakes in property and demonstration of how our limited thinking and how crazy biases and all that sort of stuff and how it manifests in ways that, you know, you'd never think and how it can cost to save people from their own selves, you know. And then, yeah, and I'm working on Home Buyer Academy, which is really exciting. And I know you have a feasibility course that you give it away, don't you? You've got like,
yeah. We sometimes sell it and sometimes we decide to just give it away. So you can get it for $7.
Well, we have a little free course in Home Buyer Academy, which might dovetail quite well with that.
Beautiful.
And that is how to price a property. So it actually teaches you the research process. We're building up a mentoring, a membership in that buying space as well. And one of our members actually posted, well, how do I index? How do I work, you know, actually bring them up to current value? And so I have to add that into the course. It's not in there actually, but it is in our feed in the membership about how to do the indexing. But, you know, it's really important to understand the process to go through to actually research property when you do your comparables. And you mentioned that earlier. So I can give you the link for that as well. That's just a free mini course. And the other thing I would ask of your listeners, if that's okay, is I have put together a survey because of this issue of trust in property. My big long-term picture is to actually try to solve this problem. How can we get holistic advice or information that actually makes sure that we understand all the different elements, all the tools that we need in our tool belt if we're going to be buying a property? Where can I go? You know, and I want to actually become a magnet for those in the industry who are more than self-interested. It's the purpose over profit. We need to make money. We're all business, right? But really the purpose is so important. And I really feel that the time has come for purpose to stand out in this industry rather than just pure profit. I know that there's a small subset of all the allied professionals that sort of feed into the property industry. I know there's a subset that give a shit. And I want to be the magnet for that subset that gives a shit. But in the meantime, I want to understand the extent of the problem. So I do have a survey for people who have had property buying experiences, whether they've bought, whether they haven't bought, whether they renovate or not, just tapping into understanding their experience in the trust side of things. So if anyone's interested in doing that survey, I'll pop the link in.
Yeah, and we will share it in our newsletter as well. I think that would be really amazing. Thank you so much for being with us here today. I've had such a fantastic chat.
My absolute pleasure. It's been fun talking to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Building with Buildher. We'd love for you to spread the word.
For show notes, links and downloads and other awesome resources and freebies, head to buildhercollective.com.au. And don't forget, that's Buildher with an H-E-R.
And if you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much to both of us if you could take a minute or two to leave a review.
And don't forget to subscribe so you can listen next time as we talk all things building and women making their mark in the building industry.